Subway has teamed up with Live Nation to bring you great food and great music for a great value. Right now, buy a Subway $5 footlong and get a Live Nation concert ticket for $5 to participating Live Nation shows like Nickelback, The Fray, and Crew Fest 2. Ticket price does not include fees. See store for details. Subway. Eat fresh.
Eat fresh.
The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. You must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report. Very important subject today. I get this email all the time. I had my own opinions on it, and then I heard the greatest theory ever that I've ever heard about it that explained why it is. And the question is, why does Los Angeles, the second biggest television market in the United States, and one of the biggest cities in the world, not have a football team? Why do they not have an NFL team? So we're bringing in the CEO of the Wasserman Media Group, as well as, according to Business Week last year, the 46th most powerful person in sports. I don't know how I didn't make this list. I feel like maybe if they expanded to a top 500, I would have made it. But anyway, here he is on the Subway Fresh Tech Hotline. Casey Wasserman, what's happening?
How are you, Bill?
I'm good. How was my intro?
Perfect. I don't know what being the 46th most important guy in sports means, other than I might be able to, you know, get my coffee at Coffee Bean, but, you know, that's good for now.
Your whole little world of executives and high rollers and all those people, you guys love those lists, though. You do look at them when they come out. You got to admit.
Yeah, except, you know, unless you're number one, it's really not that interesting to be on those lists. And if you get defined by those lists, you know, I think you end up having a pretty tortured life, so... I try not to spend too much time watching them.
So you don't think David Levy was, like, furious about the list? Let's see where he was. Oh, he's below Skipper. He's below Peter Ubereth. He's below you. He's below Adam Silver. There he is, 55. That's a little low for David Levy.
Hey, you know, look, I take what I can get.
You were ahead of Andre Agassi, Tony Hawk, Irvin Magic Johnson, Jerry Colangelo, Dana White. It's pretty good. All right, so... first of all, explain what Wasserman Media Group is so people don't think that I just, like, met you on the street and you actually have no credentials at all.
We're a global sports marketing business. That means we're, in our lingo, that means we're in the athlete representation business. We're in the corporate consulting business and the sponsorship sales business. And we operate all over the world and don't aim to be the biggest, but try and be the best in the disciplines we're in.
And you got into this world as some of the big agencies like William Morris and IMG were scaling back a little bit. So a little bit of an opportunity there. Correct?
It was. Our timing was lucky, and we've been fortunate to attract people like Arne Tellem and his crew. Which, you know, to be in business with someone who's regarded by his peers as the best agent in the world is something I'm very fortunate to do every day. And, you know, our consulting business and our sales business are led by equally reputable people, and, you know, to be able to be surrounded by those people and benefit from their 20 plus years of experience in the sports business and leverage their business and their intellect and their frankly their credibility to build our business at a time when, you know, people have lost focus or are shifting their focus away from what I think is one of the most valuable pieces of media business in the world, and that's sports. And that's what I'm excited about, and that's what I wake up every day ready to do.
And you have some big names. You get Derrick Rose, you get Steven Gerrard.
We do. Soccer, obviously, soccer/football is unquestionably the biggest sport in the world, and both in the U.S. and in Europe, we're the biggest soccer agent, and as well as basketball and baseball and action sports, which is a large and growing tremendously business and huge women's sports practice. So we're out there fighting the fight every day.
All right, so that's part one of the resume. Part two, you bought the LA Avengers of the fledgling Arena Football League, I think like 11 years ago. Weren't you like in your mid-20s?
I was 24.
You bought them for $5 million, and you became kind of the big kahuna of the league. You'd be became the chairman and all that stuff. And the league was going well for a while and then kind of started tailing off and now it no longer exists. What happened?
By the way, it's the only time fledgling would be deemed an upgrade to the actual reality of something.
All right.
Look, any sports league is only as strong as its individual teams. And the great challenge of the Arena Football League was always that you had some teams that did really well, some teams that kind of did okay, and some teams that were awful at operating in their local markets. And frankly, we didn't pay enough attention as a league to helping those teams operate better, and when we brought in new teams, to be really diligent about making sure they were going to operate well. Because, you know, look, a bad team destroys a market, as every sports league knows, or has the opportunity to destroy a market, especially when your league is as nascent as ours is and was, and relative to other leagues didn't have the sort of marketing power to overcome those kinds of challenges. And so we kind of started down this path to create a single entity league, which not like the MLS where all the players were owned by the league and allocated to teams, but where sort of a lot of the team operations were rolled up into the league. Not a awful idea, but what happened was we started down that road. We actually were pretty close to a deal happening, which would have restructured the league pretty dramatically. And then the economy imploded. And so when the economy imploded, our deal went away. And you had a bunch of owners looking at each other in November of 2008, having essentially done nothing to operate their teams for 2009 because they assumed somebody else was going to do it and somebody else was going to pay for it.
Yeah.
And that was when the time came for the owners to then say, okay, well, we're going to take the 2009 season off. And the problem with taking any time off in sports is the natural tensions of seasons beginning and ending is underappreciated until they're gone, right? So once you take a season off, here we are in September of 2009, and, well, we're already too late for 2010. So guess what? Because there was no pressure of a season ending and starting again, it's easy to take 2010 off. And, well, lo and behold, you know, owners lose interest, and some guys had good things happen, some had bad things happen. You know, the league of 17 when, you know, maybe now there's eight guys who could play, and you can't run a league on eight guys, and ESPN, who is broadcasting our games, while they say they're excited, you know, I'm not sure they're really interested to fill their air time with us coming back because they got lots of other things that they found to fill their air. And sort of that natural evolution of a league disappeared when you can take time off like that for a year. And we're not, you know, we're not even NHL, who can go away for a year and come back because they've got real partners and real TV partners and real stars that people have heard of, unlike our league.
And Canada.
At the best, we're always going to develop players for the NFL. And sort of that started sort of the beginning of the end, and then, you know, it just sort of people, well, if we're not coming back, then why should I pay bills? And if I'm not paying bills, then we're not living up to our promises to creditors, and then there's this whole sort of death spiral that we got into.
Looking at the landscape for professional sports going into this next decade, it seems to me, just a theory, that Americans now are gravitating toward whatever the best is. And maybe that's why soccer is starting to gain a little momentum, and you look at like hockey starting to come back a little bit. And I know there are other factors, but can a sport that's not offering the best possible whatever make it in this day and age in America?
So in the traditional definition of make it, which is what I think you're referring to, I would say no, it's too hard. First of all, the bar is pretty high, and the barriers to entry are even higher. So I think it's really challenging. They can survive. They can do okay, but they're going to do okay within their niche and within their who sort of what their max out is, and that's way below what you and I would define as making it.
Yeah.
And I think there's going to be a massive flight to quality over time, which is sort of the best, right? I mean, the Premier League is going to get bigger and stronger because it's the best soccer league in the world, and the NFL is going to continue to get bigger and stronger because it's maybe the best sport in the world. And all those things are going to continue to push their advantages because sort of the haves and the have-nots get further apart. And I think the WNBA, Arena Football League, Beach Volleyball,
MLS,
you know, some of these sports are going to be really challenged to find their way financially to allow them to continue to survive. And it's not that it's impossible. It's just really, really hard.
Where does MLS fit into that?
You know, MLS, to me, look, they figured out, they have wonderful owners and a great leadership at the league office in Don Garber. And they have figured out that if they build new stadiums, they can create a financial model that allows the teams to, at a worst, kind of break even and survive for a while. But I believe that the true success of soccer in America will be when one of two things happens, and it's to your point about being the best. Either the best player in the world is an American, and by definition that means he will be playing in Europe, or the U.S. maybe not win, but fundamentally wins the World Cup, because Americans like to be the best.
Yeah.
And so those two things will do more for the MLS than any new owner with a new stadium and a new market will do to build the sport. And I think the one thing the MLS has done well is they've invested in soccer in America at the youth level, and at the development of the sort of super talented young players. And that's why you're seeing more young Americans leave and go overseas to play when they're 17 and 18 as opposed to going to college and getting in the American system. Because in Europe, you get in those clubs. You get in those clubs when you're 13 or 14, and they develop you, and that's why you're a star when you're 19. And I think that bodes well, but it's a long, slow process. And in this world of instant gratification, that may not be fast enough for a lot of fans, but that, to me, is the success of MLS over a long period of time.
They've played it really well. Like, if you look at all the different new leagues that tried to start from scratch, they've probably made the least mistakes. You know what I mean? They've established markets, and I can't really think of – they haven't overexpanded. You know, they're not throwing money around like crazy. I think the Beckham thing was the one time they did it, but when you look at the money they actually laid out, it wasn't that huge of a risk, you know? But it'll be interesting to see what they do the next 5 years if the Premier League starts gaining steam in this country and La Liga.
Right. And look, they have done a great job. And look, ultimately, you know, does MLS need to merge with, like, the First Division in Mexico and create a really kind of North American Super League? Maybe. But soccer is going to continue to be more relevant in this country, more important in this country. And MLS is going to have to figure out how to elevate its game, if you will, on the pitch, frankly, more than off the pitch, to compete with overseas. Because I think the quality of the game is probably a couple steps below the Premier League level and at the high end, and they need to sort of get there so that they're on even field with attracting players. And, you know, but as you've said, they have taken the right approach almost all the time, which most leagues can't say.
Have you thought about stepping in? You like soccer. You have money.
I'm not sure the other owners would be thrilled, given that we represent about 45% of the players in the MLS.
Yeah.
About us owning a team, I'm not sure that they would think that would be a fair thing for us to be doing. So
the old conflict of interest.
or in LA, they say no conflict, no interest. But you know, in the meantime, I'm not sure the union nor the owners would be thrilled about that. So
all right, so perfect. So you buy the Clippers. This is great. I'm so excited, and you're announcing that I'm.
And you're the general manager. So
I'm
we're
so
done.
Happy. Thank God. It's finally time. But NBA, I mean, there's some bargains right now in the NBA, right?
I think there are perceived bargains. The challenge, I think, in this economy is, you know, if you own an NBA team, you think it's worth what someone told you it was worth 2 years ago. And if you want to buy an NBA team, you think it's worth half of what someone told you it was worth yesterday.
Yeah.
Which means that's why there's no teams being sold.
It sounds like buying a commercial real estate or something. Yeah, I got this building appraised at $15 million 2 years ago. Yeah, but it's worth $6 now.
And unless you're forced to sell, no one sells. And that's kind of the stalemate we're in now.
So if you could own a team in any of the four leagues, which league would you pick?
Well, that being the definition of a segue, I think it'd be the NFL, and it would be in Los Angeles.
What a great segue!
I walked right into that perfectly, didn't I?
It was great.
It's almost as if we're in the same room.
It was great. Okay. So, here we go. Nobody has put more thought, more energy, and more brain power into, number one, whether a team in LA could work, and number two, how to get one here. And you have ultimately decided, at least for now, that it's not going to work. Now, do you want to just do the whole thing all at once? I'll just shut up for like 15 minutes.
Well, we can do it in pieces. How about that?
All right. I'll chime in when necessary, but you have the floor.
Okay. So, you know, your intro was kind of the true definition of the problem, which is, you know, the second biggest media market in the country doesn't have a team. So if you back up, you know, the NFL structure, the economic structure of the league is one in which all 32 teams share all their media rights and most of all their economic revenue equally with each other. Which means that the economics, from a media perspective, being in L.A. is no different than being in Green Bay or Houston or Phoenix. So the theoretical value of the market of L.A. is almost, I would say, at least 50% driven by the media value, right? The other value would be what you could charge for things in a stadium, so like boxes, seats, and naming rights and sponsorships. So the fact that you take 50% of the value of being in a big market off the table is a huge issue. The second piece of that is, and this is L.A., but this is also California, and I would tell you it's why the four biggest challenges for the NFL in terms of new facilities are all in California, is California has never been, and certainly L.A. has never been, a city which has publicly funded or in any way publicly subsidized sporting facilities. And almost, frankly, any kind of facility. How about that? Like, not even entertainment facilities, not film studios, not stuff that you can even legitimately define the economic benefit of. I mean, it's just not what L.A. does, nor California. And with Oakland, San Francisco, and San Diego all in old, challenging financial environments because of the stadiums they play in and no team in L.A., it's not a coincidence that four of the problems for the league in terms of facilities are all in the same state.
Yeah, and if you want to extend that, you could even go like the NBA in Sacramento. They can't get a new building either.
Sacramento can't get a new building, and you know, it took two teams in L.A. to share the same building.
Yep.
And, you know, Golden State's in a brutal facility in Oakland. I mean, it's a problem which permeates sports in the state of California, and with our state economy the way it is, I'm not sure that's going to change anytime soon. So the piece of that that's relevant for the NFL is that means to gain the benefit of that other 50% of being in a market like L.A., so what you can sell naming rights, boxes, club seats, all that stuff for, you have to take more financial risk than any other NFL owner ever has to get just 50% of the benefit of being in this market.
And when you say risk, what does that mean, though?
So, you know, in Dallas, Jerry Jones, the stadium costs, you know, plus or minus $1.2 billion. He got $450 million in public funding, and then in L.A., that would be zero. So you're already taking $450 million more risk than Jerry Jones took.
Gotcha.
And arguably football in Texas is much more important than football in L.A., so he was able to do things that you probably would never be able to do here in terms of PSL. So,
and he'd also made a ton of money in the team already from what he paid for.
Correct, and his basis in the team is $190 million instead of what someone would have to pay for a team in L.A., which is $750 million or $1 billion. No one's going to give you a discount. I mean, it's not like one of the other 32 owners would say, look, yeah, buy my team and I'll sell it to you for cheap because you're going to move to L.A. and you're going to take all this risk. Actually the opposite. They think you're going to charge you more because you're taking it to L.A. where it's more valuable, even though that's completely counterintuitive to the way the league works.
Yeah.
So you're going to incur more risk in a city that has lost two teams. Now, I don't actually think that's that big a deal. I think a team here would be wildly successful, but that's separate. I think you're going to incur more risk and only gain kind of half the benefit. And that's why we don't have a team in L.A. today. That's why two teams left for St. Louis and Oakland, because financially, it's not about gross revenue. It's about net revenue. And you're going to hear a lot about that in the upcoming labor dispute, because it's not about how much money you can generate in a gross. It's how much money you can generate after the risk it took to generate that money that defines an NFL team. And so, you know, NFL owners want the CBA and the player salaries to be driven by sort of net revenue, not gross revenue.
All right, well, explain that.
Because $1.2 billion of risk is risk, but if you're and is expensive, but if you have to pay players on the gross, you're sort of paying them twice on some level, right?
Quickly explain the gross net revenue for our dumbest listeners.
So gross revenue,
which by the way includes myself.
If you add up all the revenue in a stadium, just at its face value, that's the gross revenue. You know, so add up the ticket sales and the club sales and the luxury boxes and sponsorships and naming rights. That's your gross revenue.
Yeah.
That ignores the cost that you incurred to generate that revenue. So if your debt service on your stadium is $75 million a year to generate that $200 million a year from your stadium, the net revenue is really, you know, $125 million as opposed to $200 million, which is what other people want to talk about. So net revenue is what is valuable in the NFL because it levels the playing field, if you will. Gross revenue will always be higher in a city like New York or L.A. relative to Green Bay. Net revenue may not ever be higher in a city like L.A. or New York, depending on how the stadium is financed.
And the next collective bargaining agreement, they want to tie everything to the net revenue figures, not the gross revenue.
Well, the owners want The owners want recognition that they take a lot of risk to generate that revenue that the players benefit from.
Gotcha.
So that'll be one of the conversation points.
I'm going to interject my first tangent. I'm proud of the people of California for sticking up for this whole, why should I have to spend my money to fund your new stadium, Mr. Rich Billionaire, logic, because it's never quite made sense to me. You know, like they did it, in New England. It's a nicer stadium than I guess the old one we had. It enables the owner to make more money. But by the way, the owner was already really rich. And a lot of people like the old stadium. And I think if it came down to it, when you think all the people that don't care about football, it's kind of stupid. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense that the taxpayers have to help fund these stadiums. And I guess the reason they do is for what happened with the Seattle Supersonics, where either you fund my stadium or I'm going to pull my team and I'm going to leave and I'm going to go somewhere else. That's the hammer that's hung over the head of everybody who won't fund the stadium. And LA people don't care because there's lots of stuff to do in LA. Fine. Right. Go somewhere else.
LA is not defined by whether there's an NFL team or not. A city like Indianapolis, frankly, is defined by the fact that there's an NFL team there.
Or Cleveland or Green Bay or you know, all these places, yeah.
Right. Now, the one difference in Los Angeles is, and here's the glimmer of hope to an NFL team in LA, is that LA, without anybody having to convince anybody of this argument, is maybe the greatest place to have a Super Bowl ever. And the economic impact of Super Bowls is real and definable, and you can measure it every year because one happens every year. You can argue about the value of a team in a marketplace, right? I mean, what's 8 days worth of a stadium filled by an NFL team and those guys getting paid? I mean, you know, you can argue about the tax benefit of that. You can't argue about that. Anybody who's been to a Super Bowl cannot argue about what that does for a city economically. The power, the economic power of a Super Bowl is unique amongst probably all sports. It's global, it's massive, it's consistent, and it's definable long in advance of the game. Unlike other sports leagues where you don't even know where the finals are going to be, you know where the Super Bowl is going to be 4 years from today.
And it lasts for 10 or 11 days.
And it lasts for 10 or 11 days. And there is real value to that for the city, and there's real value to that for the league. So the economic power of a Super Bowl is the one thing that could deliver. They could overcome all the obstacles to getting a team in Los Angeles.
So you're bringing this up because, in your opinion, the best chance for football to come to Los Angeles is if the league and all the owners got together and said, let's build an awesome Super Bowl venue in Los Angeles. We'll sell the rights to it to an expansion team. We'll put a Super Bowl in there every 2 or 3 years, and we're all going to make money.
Yeah, whether it's an expansion team or not, you know, that's for the league to worry about. But clearly, as crazy as this sounds, they could build a stadium in L.A. and have it be a profitable venture just playing the Super Bowl there every few years and nothing else happening there. That would be profitable for the league and the 32 owners. Now, if you did that, clearly you would end up with one and maybe even two teams in that building permanently. Having said that, you could do that without having any teams in it.
Yeah.
Now, that requires those 32 owners and the league to commit to that, and they have a lot of other priorities, and this is a market where they don't have a team, and it's hard to say that their league has been affected in any way by not having a team there economically in the short term.
Right.
And so that's the challenge.
Well, then the other thing, now for remove football from the equation. So now you have this 70,000-seat arena in Los Angeles that has football and Super Bowls. Now I can put the best concerts there, because right now, if you're playing a big concert in L.A., you have to either play at the Rose Bowl or you have to play at the Carson where the L.A. Express play, or you have to play at Dodger Stadium, which is kind of a mess for a concert. There's really no 70,000-seat awesome venue for a concert. Beyond that, what if you brought in soccer and what if you said, this is going to be our home base for every gigantic World Cup qualifier, or you know, if we bring the World Cup here in 2016, this will be the main stadium for it. There's lots of different ways this could go.
My beloved UCLA Bruins could play their home games there, which is much, you know, instead of going to Pasadena.
Right. So where would you put the stadium if you...
I mean, you really want to talk about value. You bring UCLA football. I mean, that's value.
Well, where would you put the stadium if you had your druthers?
You know, look, if you want to talk about Los Angeles, the best place for a stadium is in the city of Los Angeles. So Pasadena, Carson, all those places aren't the city of L.A. Those are cities around L.A., but they're not the city of L.A., and, you know, somewhere downtown, right, somewhere where there's an economic impact beyond just that facility that adds value, is the place a stadium should be. Now, obviously, that's a lot easier said than done, but there's no question that in downtown L.A., where L.A. Live is, now SportsCenter is broadcasting, where the Staples Center is, where the Convention Center is, where there's billions of new hotels planned, where most of the central business district is, where Dodger Stadium is close to, that's where a stadium should be. Now, there's a few places people have talked about. I'm sure any one of those could work, but in the general sense, downtown L.A. is where a stadium should be because that adds the most economic benefit to the city of Los Angeles and the residents of the city of Los Angeles.
You're not worried about the traffic?
You know, look, you have traffic. You're talking about a Saturday or Sunday, not a Thursday night. And you're talking about eight times a year at 10 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday if you want to go to a 1 o'clock kickoff.
Yeah.
It's not that bad.
And then coming home at maybe,
you know, a
5:30.
Laker game or a Dodger game, you know, the Dodgers-Mets game on a Thursday night, that's traffic.
Yeah. Well, I wonder maybe there's that stretch from, like, where downtown L.A. is to where, like, the Dodger Stadium is. There's that one highway. I can't remember the name of it. It's like the 134 or something like that.
So, yeah.
It's like five lanes. There's never people on it. Maybe it belongs somewhere near there. I don't know.
You know, look,
it's kinda in LA,
there are some places that work. You know, in the end, the other good thing about being downtown is you can just build a stadium. You don't have to build parking because all those buildings and all those facilities and all those parking lots are empty on Sundays at 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
When they're full is Monday to Friday between 8 and 5 o'clock. And that's when you don't play football. And so lots of things line up well for a facility in downtown. But then again, look, this is the ultimate issue for getting the NFL back to L.A. It requires everybody involved. That means the people of L.A., the politicians of Los Angeles, the NFL office, the NFL owners, to do something they have never really done before. Right? I mean, this requires all sides to do something unique. And that's always hard to achieve. Doesn't mean it's impossible. Doesn't mean it'll never happen. But really hard to achieve.
You mean it takes 32 rich, stubborn guys to get in a room together and all agree to put away their egos and just do something that's really smart and makes sense and will eventually make them all money.
And may not benefit any of them in the short term. And with all the other stuff going on, they got to do this. Right? It requires the league office to make it a priority, which... If I worked as league office, I'm not sure if it'd be a priority for me because those 32 owners are my bosses in one sense, and what my job is to preserve and increase the value of their franchises, and I'm not sure in the short term this does that. It may, it may not. It requires politicians in L.A. not to be petty and to gather around something that's good for the whole of L.A., and I think it would be unbelievably successful for everybody involved. But L.A., as you know now living here for a while, is really cynical. And people don't believe it until it's real. And you can't really talk about it, and you can't really convince anybody of it. You just kind of have to take a chance and do it. And if you do it and it works, it's a home run. But you're not going to convince people before you actually do it and make it happen.
The biggest misnomer about L.A. with the whole football thing, and what drives me crazy when I hear it, and it's something I even thought of before I moved here, was like, oh, they won't care. They won't go to the games. Like, they, first of all, people absolutely go to the games, and it's football's kind of the perfect sport, the NFL, for what LA is, because you have, you know, you have people who have a lot of money who are going to want suites, who are going to want, you know, great seats, whatever. So that whole demo's covered, as we've seen the fact that the Lakers and Clippers can sell high price tickets and get the money for it. But then you also have all the people in and around LA that would go into that second and third tier, the guys that work on movie sets, you know, the blue collar guys, all those people would go to football games eight times a year. So believe me, they would sell out. There'd be a waiting list for tickets. I have no doubt.
No question. I couldn't agree with you more. And you have to think about the history of LA football. Think about, you know, we've only seen games at either Anaheim Stadium, which is a badly converted baseball stadium for football games, or the Coliseum, which was an ill-equipped stadium for kind of what people are used to these days. You know, your favorite team, the Clippers, played at the Sports Arena in front of 2,000 people. They go to Staples Center, a modern new arena with all the amenities everybody looks for, and they, you know, on good nights, they sell out those games. People want to go. It's L.A., right? People want convenience, and comfort and luxury and intimacy and all those things that they've never had watching football here. Today, if you go watch a college football game, no one watches it from a tiered stadium. They watch it from gigantic bowls, which are the least friendly, least consumer-friendly opportunities for people to watch football at the Rose Bowl and the Coliseum. So if you've been to a new football stadium, you realize how different and great the experience can be. And I think if you provided that in L.A., it would be successful beyond anybody's imagination.
And the thing that people maybe don't totally factor in is just how much money there is here. Like you see it at the Clippers games. You have people that they don't like the organization. They're hopeless. They feel like, you know, they basically can't get Lakers tickets but have the disposable money and want to see NBA basketball and just buy seats for the Clippers knowing that it's a terrible investment. But they don't care because they have the money. And those are the people that will fill up all the suites, all of the lower tier club seats or whatever, however you want to bilk them for whatever price you want to charge. They're going to pay it because those people are here. So
and for football, no matter how expensive a ticket is, you only are multiplying it by 8 or 10 games,
yep,
as opposed to 40 or 80.
Yeah.
So even, you know, a $500 ticket is cheaper on a seasonal basis than a $100 ticket for the Clippers.
Right. So now everybody's listening to this and they're thinking, I wasn't prepared to totally buy into this, but this is so logical. Now I'm totally confused why this can't happen. So here's my next question. It would seem like from everything laid out, the most logical thing would be for the NFL to plan to build the stadium and then to make it a 33rd expansion team and just put a price tag on it and say, who wants to pay it? Who wants in? Now, they could probably get like, what, 700, 800? What would they get? Would give them half ownership of the stadium, whoever's buying the team? I don't know. How would that part work?
You know, yes, if the NFL took control and built a stadium, it would happen a lot easier than some individual who didn't either own a team nor was the league trying to build a stadium independently of this. All it requires is the league and the owners to make it a priority and to have the city of L.A., behave or interact with the NFL in a way that they are open and trusting and work to a solution as opposed to work to benefit their own interests. That's the challenge, right? That intersect is the challenge, is how you get both sides to kind of put history behind us and say, look, while it doesn't define L.A., it would be great for L.A. to have a facility like this that had Super Bowls and maybe Pro Bowls and lots of other events and maybe a couple of teams there. And the NFL, for its owners in the league to say, you know what? We have a lot of other things that are important, a lot of other things that are pressing. This is a priority because it is a huge market. It has a tremendous fan base. There's 10 million people here. It's a Latin presence here. It's a gateway to Asia. And for our strategic growth over the next 25 years, L.A. is an important market for us to think about, just as Mexico City and London are important markets for us to think about. And we need to create a solution. And the only way we're going to create a solution is much like we did in Cleveland, where we take control and we do the heavy lifting, and then we benefit from financially from that heavy lifting.
Yeah, and then you think the difference with L.A. and Cleveland is, as we talked about before, soccer, concerts, UCLA football. This is legitimate. That's what I don't get, is it just seems like if there's a void here that can clearly be filled, then everybody can make money. Usually people end up in the right place with it. And here it's just sitting here. I've been here 7 years. It's crazy to me that there's no big stadium. It's insane. Like Bruce Springsteen has to play at Dodger Stadium. Yeah, it's cool to see Bruce Springsteen in Dodger Stadium, but not an ideal place for a concert. Like it's really hard for me to believe that that's the best place all around here that somebody could play.
And frankly, it's because of all of that that I think people even still talk about it, right? I mean,
yeah.
If it wasn't for all that, it would have been a flash in the pan. People would have talked about it for a little bit, and then when they realized they missed their window, they would have stopped. But it's L.A., and L.A. is never going away, and the NFL is never going away. And at some point, it's hard to imagine that they don't come together. And my view has always been they need to come together as the city and the league working to create a solution together. And I think, look, the commissioner, the mayor, the city council, at some point, something will coalesce that brings everybody together. I don't know if that's this year or in 10 years, because there's lots of other things for everybody going on. You know, the city's got budgets to manage and fill with huge budget deficits, and the league's got labor issues and things that are very pressing for it. But at some point, I think that's how the solution gets created, because the opportunity here is almost unlike any other opportunity in all of professional sports, not even just the NFL.
Well, you know the commissioner. Is he, I mean, is this something that's a priority to him, or he doesn't care?
No, he cares. He understands probably better than anybody the challenges about Los Angeles and the opportunity. But as you can see in the NFL, its owners and the commissioner have to work together to get solutions. You know, I mean, the commissioner isn't going to do anything on his own, and no owners are going to go do anything on their own. It has to be a group effort, and that's what needs to happen. And, you know, at some point, you got to believe that will happen. And maybe it's, you know, something we can't even imagine coming together. But I really believe, you know, that L.A. could be the greatest home for an NFL team in terms of support and excitement and passion and all the things the NFL is, I think can be better in L.A. than almost anywhere.
Yeah, see, I would have had some sort of – I would have followed that up with a sarcastic comment because I was a big fan of the L.A. sports fans. But I've seen the UCLA and the USC fans in action. Like, they have real football fans here. And that's what's crazy to me is that this is a big football city. The UCLA-USC thing is legitimate. There's, like, a lot of bitterness on both sides. They freaking hate each other. So I know it would work here.
And the cynic in me will tell you we already have a quasi-professional football team at USC.
Right. Well, they might make more money than some of the players. Yeah, that's a good point.
That's pretty, yeah, well. I'll keep my mouth shut now.
Yeah. So how fast could you, if you had to, if you got the call from the commish, how fast could you drum up a whole team of California people, an ownership group, to get maybe something going?
See, it's funny. My perspective is, in the abstract, you know, everybody thinks this, you're crazy, this will never happen, this, you know, why would I spend any time thinking about this? But if the NFL sort of said, okay, tomorrow you got to get in line, and here's the deal. If whoever pays the most, you get the keys. And when you use those keys, what you open up is a building with a team, and it's all ready to go. You don't have to do any work. You don't have to get beat up in the press. You just have to pay us, right? I mean, so all the work has been done. I think that line would be really long.
I agree.
That's why doing the work is really important. If it's one person doing the work, that's where it becomes personal and competitive and backstabbing and all those things. But if it was really just like, okay, we've done all the heavy lifting, the stadium deal is done, the steel is coming out, this is the team, this is where you're going to play, this is where you're going to practice, you just got to write us a really big check, there'd be a group of people or an individual far greater than people realize ready to do that.
Yeah, I agree. Well, one thing we forgot to talk about with the whole Super Bowl thing, because that's a little more complicated than it just seems on paper. To just for the NFL to say every 3 years, every 4 years, the Super Bowl will be in L.A., for whatever reason, they love sprinkling it around and taking care of the different owners. Do you think the other owners would sign off on, all right, every 3 years it's in L.A., that's fine?
Well, if they were the ones economically benefiting from it, I think you can make that argument.
Yeah.
Right? Because the Super Bowl is league inventory. So that means each owner owns 1/32nd of the Super Bowl, if you will.
Yes.
So if the Super Bowl became a huge profit center because of a unique situation like you could create in Los Angeles, having it here every 3 or 4 or 5 years makes financial sense.
And now
in the end,
okay,
they sprinkled around because it was important and is important to do to help get facilities built because it truly is an economic driver. But they've built 25 new stadiums or whatever the number is, so there's not that many left to build.
Yeah.
And once you've built them all, if you've got a team in L.A., where else would you rather be than maybe L.A., maybe New Orleans, maybe Miami? I mean, talk about great cities to put the Super Bowl from an entertainment and a weather and a sort of hospitality perspective. L.A.'s got to be at the top of the list.
Yeah, if we settled on an L.A., Miami, New Orleans rotation, I'll tell you, I'd do backflips. I'd also probably get divorced. Probably the two outcomes of that. The Super Bowl thing. Let's say every owner gets a 2% stake in the stadium, and then the new owner, when he pays for the expansion team, gets a 36% chance. I'm just talking, you know, whatever. Then it would be in the vested interest of the owner to want to have the Super Bowl in that stadium every 3 years, even if they had a 1% stake, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would tell you that's what I mean by, you know, people doing things that they've never done before. That's a unique business model for the NFL. And to get that done, by the way, it would require unique behavior on the people from the city of L.A. side. But that's the kind of thing that it's going to take to get a team done. The traditional model of rich guy buys team, moves to L.A., spends more money to build stadium, not happening.
I would even go a little further.
I mean, look, the last guy to buy a team in a city who needs a new stadium was in Minnesota. He paid, you know, whatever he paid. Ziggy Wilf paid $650 million for the team or whatever he paid. And here we are 6 or 7 years later, and he can't get a stadium built in a city that already has a team that actually loves the team and probably serves 6 or 7 states around it. And he can't get a stadium built.
Mm.
So it's illogical to think that it's so simple and straightforward to get it built in a city that doesn't have a team where you'd have to spend more money than that to buy a team and more risk to build a team, to build a stadium in L.A.
And again, not just the concerts, but if you pulled in the soccer, maybe got some soccer money out of it. Like what would happen if somebody bought the worst Premier League team and said, I'm going to base them in L.A. We'll come play you. Or you come to L.A. and play us, and that becomes America's Premier League team. That would be interesting.
That would be amazing. Although I wouldn't want to...
you wouldn't want that 12-hour flight?
I definitely would want the rights to prescribe Ambien to the players.
Well, I guess then that stadium would have to be in New York. But maybe we could do it in the Mexican League.
Yeah, for sure.
It's a little more realistic.
And it's not, you know, I don't think it's crazy to think that you could do that in Dallas, too, in Jerry Jones' new stadium.
Well, he's even kind of hinted at that. Hasn't?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right, Casey Wasserman, that was great. You've turned America onto this whole thing. I think you're onto something. I really do. I love picking apart theories and being like, yeah, but, and I don't have a yeah, but for this. I don't have one.
Well, then I feel like my day has been successful then.
All right. Casey Wasserman, thank you for being on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Talk to you soon.
Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.